Wenn Herr Krüger von der Witness and Archives, Herr Rühlefall von der Witness and Archives, and Dirk Weiss-Nix von der Witness and Archives, they will also speak about digital work on secondary sources, including secondary sources from the Kirchberg conferences.
Yes, yeah, thank you, Alois. Welcome to this presentation. We will also here speak about tools, not direct about the Nachlass, how tools that one can use to handle the Nachlass. Before Dieter and Rune will speak about the primary sources and the interlinking capacity of our open access platform, I will inform you about some thoughts and goals behind this platform and about the primary sources. The overall intention of our presentation is, of course, to elicit your comments and criticism that will help us to improve this platform, and this is very important for us. The main goal of the WAP is now it is to bring Wittgenstein's work to the people, or in our case, to bring him on the screen. And by anticipating the user's interest, we get a more detailed list of the needs of our clients or of the users. Anticipating someone starting their research on Wittgenstein might have questions like these. How much Wittgenstein material is available? How can I get it? How much will it cost? And what about the connection between Wittgenstein's work and the topic I have to work with? Or maybe the question if Wittgenstein has written anything relevant about my topic. Maybe also what can I do with the Nachlass if I can't understand German? This maybe is also a question. The last question I have, there can be persons are interested if there are any articles by other authors about the topic he won't work with. In some way, how to make the user happy list may be incomplete, and some of the questions sounds trivial, but I think that we think that the success of our publication offered to the Wittgenstein community depends on the answers we can give to questions like this. And that will be answers about the material, what kind of material we can deliver, primary sources as well as secondary ones. That will be questions about the tools, how we or the user can present the text, and what research tools we can offer. And last not least, there will be a question about the role of the user. Is the user only to be passive, or can we, and that is our interest, can we involve the user in the publication process? It's not a surprise, WAP's answer to a requirement like this is the electronic open access platform for digital Wittgenstein research. That is the title of our presentation. And the idea behind is to deliver as many services as possible under one roof. They should be not more than a mouse click away for free, and of course accessible to everyone. And some of these services are provided exclusively by WAP, and others can be found elsewhere, but here they are collected together or linked together in one place, and as I said, it available for free. The development of this platform, of this open access platform, is deeply connected to the history of the projects that made this platform possible. So here's the motto: no projects, no platform. And that means, of course, no project, not so much money to develop a platform. And the first step was the Bergen Electronic Edition. And the publication of the Bergen Electronic Edition in the year 2000, together with Oxford University Press, as the most complete edition of Wittgenstein's Nachlass, provided the basis for every further publication of our work with Wittgenstein. And this is true not just for the primary transcription we have produced, but also for the presentation of these materials in two different text versions, in the norm version and in the Diplo version. I will maybe say later more about it in connection with the discovery project. These two different text versions, and in addition a facsimile version. And this, together with a lot of tools for the handling of this enormous quantity of text, this is all around 20,000 pages and more than 150 manuscripts, typescripts, and dictations. And these tools are tools produced by FolioView. The work on a new Bergen electronic edition is an ongoing process at WAP, and the catalog we have spoken about, the more flexible Nachlass catalog, will be a part of this. That was named by Jonathan Smith. Okay, the next step we did 6 years later. It was the start of the discovery project. On the one hand, this discovery project stands for an open access platform, and on the other hand, for WAP's first opportunity to construct an anthology for Wittgenstein's work. And Didra will say more about it later. The fact that we can offer here not more than roughly 25% of the Nachlass, or of the text you get by the Bergen electronic edition, I think has to be seen as a compromise between commercial interests and discovery's main goal. And this is of providing an open access library, so freely available, of primary sources in European philosophy. And we did it together with other partners. However, I think the 5,000 pages are selected in a way that allows the user to become familiar with Wittgenstein's so-called middle period. The material consists of 20 Nachlass items organized in terms of complexes, and I will show it to you. These are the complexes I'm talking about. It's the Notes on Logic complex, the Lecture on Ethics complex, the Big Types complex, and the Brown Book complex. Maybe the, I don't know, the highlight, maybe the Big Types script with some notebooks that Wittgenstein used to write the manuscript that he later used for the typescript 211, 212 before he dictated the Big typescript. As in the same way as in the Bergen electronic edition, these items are presented. You can get it in a diplomatic and in a normalized way. We are talking here about the Bergen text edition, and edition, and in addition to that, you get also a facsimile edition. And this this edition is accompanied by a short description of the paper, and we can Jonathan Smith thanks for this description. Yeah, and in addition to this, and this is a little bit special, you get a program that allows you to construct an interactive dynamic presentation of the text, and that means you get here a filtering tool, and that you can create an edition by your own wishes. Maybe you are interested in all the slashes or all the remarks with slashes on the left margin, so you can use this filtering tool. By this, it's possible not to have a static norm version, a static dynamic version, but you can have something like a mixture. Maybe if the norm version, this is known as the reader-friendly version. This is a norm version of the text manuscript 139A. This is normally a version without deletions, so we without deletions, and opposition to that, you can also get the Diplo version, and in the deep blue version you can see it here are all the deletion, and by this interactive dynamic presentation you get the possibility to create an edition. This is in a way reader friendly like the norm version, but that includes also these deletions of the text. And of course a facsimile edition can use that you as a user have the possibility to check the quality of our edition. Yes, I'm ready, and now Rune will say more about secondary sources that are connected to the Agora project.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that at the main page of the Wittgenstein Archives website, there's a link called Nachlass, on which you can find a pretty nice overview of the different sources, primary sources, which are digitally or online available. So at the end of this presentation, we'll have a slide with a few relevant links for you, so you can note them down then if you want to. Okay, as Willem said, the work with the primary sources will continue, but currently we're working on secondary sources, and we're involved in an EU project called Agora. Me and Deirdre presented the project last year in general terms, and we talked a lot about what we wanted to do. We're now at the stage when we can show you some initial results, some work in progress results from the project so far. But let me just briefly run through a few main points about the project in general. It's about making academic resources available, open access, and in an interlinked way, so that you can easily navigate from one source to the other. The project started last year and will finish in December next year, so all material will be available as of, I suppose, January 2014. The project has partner institutions in several other cities working on other philosophers, for example Nietzsche, and we have technical staff in Pisa and Oxford and so on. I'm going to concentrate on the Wittgenstein aspect of the project. So it's about open access publishing. That means resources are freely available and you can pretty much do whatever you want with it. It's published under a Creative Commons license. So basically, you can do whatever you want with material as long as you cite it or give references to the sources. It's developed in open source software, published in open source software. It's and all the material consists of secondary philosophical sources interlinked with each other, and given time also with the primary sources. And as a way of connecting these sources with each other, we use keywords and ontologies, the latter of which Deirdre will speak more about later. Also, there's some experimenting with peer reviewing and open access versus commercial publishing. That comes under the Nordic Wittgenstein review portion of the project, which is also something Deirdre will say a few words about later. Let me say a few words about what material is included. The peer-reviewed open access journal, the Nordic Wittgenstein Review, that's one of them. Then there are 500 papers from the Kirchberg Symposia, from the pre-proceedings published each year, and we include 500 papers from the period 2001 until 2010, which will be made available in PDF, HTML, and an underlying XML material. We'll also have selected publications from the Wittgenstein Archives, monographs, papers, some audio and video lectures. And there will be, Ontos Verlag will also publish some proceedings open access. So if you go to Ontos Verlag, you will find a link called Ontos Open, which will give you a list of the free resources. All of the authors we have contacted have been asked to propose a set of keywords which describe the contents of the paper so that we're able to interlink them afterwards. We have in our database right now about 1,000 keywords which have been slightly edited and streamlined to avoid too much overlapping. And all these papers are then encoded in XML and tagged with metadata, including these keywords, and then uploaded in what we call what's called Open Journal System, which is an open source software platform for making publications available. Right now, we have 200 papers online. We should have 500 by the end of the project. And the OJS, or the Open Journal System platform, looks like this. And I'm just going to show you a few slides so that you can get a certain conception of how it works and how it's searchable, browsable, how we can navigate it. This is an example of one of the papers which are uploaded by now. It's by Luciano Pozzocchi, his paper called About die letzte Zusammenfassung. The screen we see now, which is the HTML representation. So that's one of the formats available. It will also be possible to read it as a PDF, which can be blown up to full screen. You can download the PDF, and given time, you will also have access to the underlying XML. You can navigate the site in different ways. You can, for example, browse it by issue. Each volume for each year is considered an issue of the journal, so to speak. So 2001 is one issue, 2002 is another, and so on. You can browse it by author, giving you an alphabetic list. Furthermore, by title, again, alphabetic. And you can also search for, let's say, any term included in the papers, or you can search for authors, enter titles, keywords or index terms, and so on. A third browsing option is using keywords. What you see on the left of the screen now is a so-called keyword cloud, which consists of the 50 most recurrent keywords in these 200 papers. So clicking on any of these keywords will give you a list of all the papers which are categorized with that particular keyword. For example, if I choose method, this is the list of papers I get, or at least the first part of the list. So for example, we have Oskari Kuusela's paper, Wittgenstein's Way Out of Kantian Philosophy, and I can then click the HTML and I get his paper up on screen. Also, there are some tools, article tools you can use, and what we see here is a box containing all the metadata for this particular item, which can be good, for example, if you want to reference it properly or anything. There's also a link called How to Cite Item. Last slide. Nifty little feature is also, if you want to see how many people cited your paper, you can use the link Finding References, which will then collect information from both Google Scholar and Wittgenstein Live Academic. So that's just a very fast and initial illustration of how this portal works. Kira.
I'm just going to pass this around. This is, some of you may have already purchased it. It was at least, I don't know if there are copies left, on sale at a nice price of £9 down at the bookstore. But this is the first issue of the Nordic Wittgenstein Review. So start here. Right. First, I'll just say that everything that Runa just said you could do with the Wittgenstein Symposium papers, the searches, etc., you can do that on the OJS for the Nordic Wittgenstein Review. So I'm not going to say anything about that. I'll just talk a little bit about what it has. It's open source, it's OJS, as Runa said. It's also open access. And what's interesting about the open access is that it's delayed, the open access is delayed. That is, it's in a print form first, and it'll be delayed. I'll say more about that later. So right now, you can't access it online. There's only a print version. But I'll show you the structure of what the time delay is in a later slide. There'll be two issues annually. except for during the project period. And so in 2012 and 2013, there'll be one issue annually, and this is the first issue in 2012. The publisher is the Nordic Beacon Sign Society, and the editor-in-chief is Ursa Neumann, who's at OBU, and she'll stay the editor-in-chief for the project period, beyond the project period. There's an editorial board that takes care of organizational tasks, and there's an advisory board that takes care of scientific tasks, and there is a rotational editorship. Currently, it's in Bergen, and it's Alois Pickler and Simo Settle, who are the editors, but after the project period, it's going to rotate between different Nordic institutions that are part of the Nordic Wittgenstein Society. It's peer-reviewed, and it's double-blind and open review. And one of our experiments, there were two experiments. We have an OJ, a publishing experiment, which I will come back to. And then open review is an experiment. I'll explain what that is, again, a little bit later. Right, so here's a table of contents. And each issue will have five aspects. And I'm not sure if... I don't think this is standard, and it's quite exciting, some of these, but... The first one is that there's an invited paper you see up at the top. And then there'll be a section, a peer-reviewed article section. So these are articles that people have submitted, and they've been peer-reviewed. And there's an interview section. And there's a republication of similar work section. This is also, very exciting. And this will be in every issue, not just during the project period. And finally, there's a book review section. So it's quite a bit of variety. As I said, there's a delayed publication. This is our publishing experiment. The deadline for the second issue is November 30th this year. It's coming up. These papers will be subjected to a double-blind peer review. And then in most likely April of next year, for the month of April, it might be extended into May like it was this year, there'll be a pre-publication issue. And in the pre-publication issue, the idea here is that the submitted articles that have been through peer review, they're available for open review, which means that you can go in and write comments. You can give a review feedback to the author, which they can, again, for the print publication, take consideration of and alter and make their article even better. And then, as this year, the print publication will be in August next year, and then there's a three-month delay, and then it will be available open access, just as this year's issue will be available open access in November. And the idea here is to see if you can combine a print publication where you would earn money and charge for it and open access, that it, you can combine the two, that it's economically feasible for a publisher. Right, so I just want to show, so we have here, we have a paper by Alex Davies, How to Use Ordinary Language Offensively. And then you see that Lars Herzberg has gone in and write quite an extensive comments to give the author feedback. There weren't much feedback given, so we're hoping that the next round, again, and you all are people that might want to go in and give feedback to the articles that have been chosen through peer review. So I'd encourage you around April next year to go in to the website and see what's there and if you want to comment on it. Now, I'm going to move on to our ontology, and I guess ontology is a hard concept, at least for me to understand, so I've kind of pinch something from Protégé. They have a pizza ontology there in Alton a little bit, just to give you guys an idea of what an ontology is. Do people mainly understand what a computer ontology is? Anyone? Everyone, yes? Okay. No, okay, thank you. That's good. No, good, yes. It's not the same as a philosophical ontology. So it consists of classes, instances, and properties. And instances are linked via properties. Joseph has talked a little bit about this in an earlier presentation. So pizza, everyone's familiar with pizza. Sorry, it's kind of late, and maybe I shouldn't use pizza. I don't know if you guys are hungry or anything, but didn't think about it. So we have a class, which is pizza, yeah? And we can have instances of the class. So cheese pizza, vegetarian pizza, meaty pizza, interesting pizza. We can have a subclass, which would be named pizza, and there can be instances under that. For example, Norwegian pizza, Kirkberg pizza, or Mama's pizza, if anyone's been to Mama's. We can have toppings. You need toppings on pizza. The cheese topping, and then, of course, there are lots of different kinds of cheeses, and this list can go on, of course. I'm just giving you an idea of class instance, yeah, and many more. And then we have properties. And here it's very simple. You can have a topping. Something can be a topping of. You can have a base, or something can be a base of, yeah? So here's some examples.
So for Norwegian Pete's, I have Hasse Topping, Fjordepølse, and Jarlsberg, and Namsok. So it needs to have all of these. Kirkeberg pizza, well, it's mushroom time of year. I don't know what anything about Austrian cheeses. So Chanterelle Boletus, Steinpilz, or Irish Hommel, and mozzarella. Unfortunately, no one has that pizza. I'm kind of sad to say. Then we have a Mama's pizza. It's very good, which is prosciutto and mozzarella and rocket and parmesan. And you can have lots of different other kinds of pizzas. All right. And now I'm going to kind of show how... So there's an interlinking between things. It's sort of... classifies things as well. Wilhelm mentioned we had an ontology, and I think also Joseph mentioned that we developed an ontology for the Discovery Project. This is sort of an overview of it. It's quite simple. We have sources. A source, you can see the sort of class and subclass structure here. We have primary sources and secondary sources, which again we've talked about. The primary sources were developed in Discovery, and the secondary sources we're developing in the Agora Project. And a subject ontology, and then we have issues, point, perspective, and field. Field would be the philosophical field. Point is something we developed in Discovery, but we're not using in Agora. Issue is more like a term, a category, which or like a keyword. Now, I would show you, I'm going to show you an actual a tool we developed that under Discovery. Unfortunately, we have internet here, so it's very restricted. I can show. So instead, I'm going to show some other slides. But we talked about keywords just to get an idea of what this would look like in relation to accessing information, because that was an issue in the first two talks today about a catalog and finding good entry points. Albert Schmidt was talking about this, good entry points into the Nachlass, because most people don't work with manuscripts or typescripts. It's very daunting. And you're used to maybe working with the brown book or the big typescript, and you don't know which manuscripts or typescripts went into what you've been looking at. So finding ways of getting to what you need to get to and learning along the way. So here, a paper of mine, these are the keywords. As an author, I wrote to myself and asked myself the keywords. These are keywords I gave for my Kirkeberg paper in 2007. And if we take one of them, these and more were the hits, the other papers. So if you go into my paper and you find the keyword and you go in and you hit on the keyword, you get all of these other papers that talk about perspicuous presentation. And then we've talked about interlinking and primary sources and secondary sources interlink. This is not something that's been operationalized yet. And right now you see our sources aren't linked together. They're sort of in separate OJSs, open journal systems. But eventually, at the end of the project, they should be interlinked. And this is sort of way, and also maybe interlink, with external data. And here's something to get an idea of what we're sort of working toward. You could have my paper in the middle, and it has an author, me. It refers to a source, a primary source, which is manuscript 139A, which is a basis for the lecture on ethics. It has a subject, which would be, I think, issue in the earlier diagram we saw, which is ethics. It also has a subject, composite photography, and then that might be linked to Wikipedia, for example. It refers to a person, Francis Galton, and again, you could find a site that has information about Francis Galton. It also could refer to another secondary source. Maybe it doesn't actually, but you know, maybe my paper in 2008, I referred to myself. And here's another view. Perhaps I could go, I'd say, oh, composite photography, I wonder if anyone else is talked about that. That's interesting. It could be, you know, objects of comparison. So that you could go over here and click on that, and then you would get, you would come to different papers. Rieckmeyer, for example, 2009 refers to, in the Kirkeberg Symposium papers refers to it. It's also in one of our audio sources that we'll be providing. James Koenig gave a lecture where he talked about Galton. In fact, these are pictures that he showed during his talk. And then you could go to external source and find about composite photography. Also composite photography you find in the big typescript and in manuscript 139A. And big typescript would be not a manuscript source, but another source. And now, do I have time? So this is PhiloSpace. And like I said, unfortunately, we're going to show you several things, but only one is working because we don't have internet. This is MS-139A's lecture on ethics. So I can go here and right-click, and then I can focus on the item. And then I get a sort of rosette, a visualization here. And here we see manuscript 139A. Joseph explained the sigla. It's a bemerkung. It's a single remark. And they have their own unique web address, so you can refer to them as well. And it's stable. So this, it refers to a source, George Edward Moore, and it has the author of the Wittgenstein. You see, this is, you see the ontology here. You've got the instances, and you have the properties. And it is a part of, it's a part, of course, of manuscript 139A. It has a date. This is something people have been, and you might be interested in, what else did he write at that time? Was he concerned with the same sort of issues in that time? And you can do this with other manuscripts as well. And I could, you know, I could go click on the date, and then a new Rosette would open with all of the manuscripts that have the same date. And it was published in the work, Lecture on Ethics, and there you have that combination of something you're familiar with, oh, Lecture on Ethics. And then you can go, you could focus on Lecture on Ethics and then find out which manuscripts it was composed of, or, and it refers to a person. George Edward Moore, there should be, let's see here, you can also have a different view, a conceptual tree. Let's see here, can it won't go, it won't go down, okay. But it would be a work of Moore, and to the person Moore. So that just to give an idea, since it was an issue of ways of entering into using the Nachlaus, I think that this is a way, but yeah. Okay, that's it.